That Podcast Thing presents Home Movie Club, originally recorded October 2017. Episode number 13, Save Our Souls.
Hello and welcome to Home Movie Club. In this episode, we have been watching 1997's Titanic, a film starring a big boat and... Actually, no, I can't even bother to do that joke anymore. Joining me this week, as always, I am delighted to say we have Joe Carter.
Hi, Mum.
Daisy Swaffer.
Hi, Joe's Mum.
And my darling wife, Sammy Kelsch.
Hello, Mrs. Joe.
And of course, hello, Joe's Mum from me. So yes, Titanic, one of only two films to ever make more than $2 billion at the box office.
Wow.
Making this and James Cameron's other hit, in inverted commas, Avatar, the two most profitable films ever made.
Seriously? Avatar?
Yep, Avatar was also a $2 billion breaking film.
Jeez.
I suspect due to the 3D element and the fact that they doubled the price for the 3D showings, but, you know.
It didn't hurt. It could not have hurt. I mean,
nope.
Seriously.
The dude knows how to print money.
So, yes, Titanic, obviously a completely fictional story based upon a true historical event. A film of, I felt, possibly two, maybe three parts. The first part being the... love story, the second part being the sinking of the boat, and the third part being sort of a wrap-up. And there did seem to be very distinct parts between them. But let's just my opinions. What do the rest of the podcast crew think? Joe, what did you think of this film?
I was expecting to hate it because you'd been hating on it. And I watched it, realised that it's actually not that bad. I didn't cry this time. The first time I watched it, when it was on ITV with my mum, we were both crying. But it was still... I hadn't remembered how it started. That was bizarre. But yeah, it wasn't that bad.
Fair enough. Daisy, your thoughts on the film?
Given this is my second time seeing it in all of its 20 years, and I hated the first time I saw it because I was expecting a story of the Titanic... on a second viewing, and therefore knowing what to expect in terms of love story, I liked it a lot more this viewing because I was actually able to appreciate the Titanic stuff a lot more rather than going, ugh, love story.
And Sammy.
Okay, full disclosure, I was 13 years old when this movie was first released. So I think I didn't hate it then, and now I think it has pacing and editing issues, and it has what I think if I compare this to Avatar in terms of sort of characters and representative morals and the moral of the story, as it were, it feels like it has very Cameron-esque kind of obviousness when it comes to certain elements of characterization and storyline that I found really annoying.
Yeah, and this film actually is a first for me on this podcast because this is the first film I actually rage quit whilst watching.
He did. I got a little scared.
First hour in, and after the first hour, I could not watch anymore. I just quit out of it entirely.
I feel like we need to make you a badge or like a hat of shame or something like that.
Thankfully for this very podcast, we were actually a little bit behind the curtain. This should have been recorded last weekend, but we were suffering from illnesses among the team. So we actually postponed by a week, which meant that last night I forced myself to watch most of the rest of the film. I say most because I still did fast forward through some of the bits that were interminably terrible. However, most of the second part we watched was the bit where the boat was sinking, which I have to say I enjoyed an awful lot more.
I've got to say, you brought this on yourself because this entire podcast concept was your idea.
Yeah.
I know.
No one to blame but yourself. You must have known Titanic would be the highest grossing for its year.
Yep, I guess.
She's not wrong.
So yes, Titanic, 1997's highest grossing movie. I do like there was one small bit in it, which was Jack Dawson, who is the lead, played by Leonardo DiCaprio, has a line in it, which is, "I figure life's a gift and I don't intend on wasting it." That echoed quite strongly in my mind as I initially turned the film off and went off and did something else. Life is a gift, and I don't want to waste it watching this terrible, terrible movie.
So tell us what you really think, Dave.
I loved it. I loved every... No, really, can't stand it. So let's get into the plot of the thing. The film in itself is 3.5 hours long.
And I may spend that long telling you fun facts during this podcast.
Yeah, the film itself is about 3.5 hours long, but actually not a vast amount happens in quite a lot of it. As Sammy alluded to earlier, I think there are definitely pacing and editing issues with this film.
Honestly, somebody, probably a woman, should have gone to this movie and just gone at it with, you know, like a really powerful pair of editing scissors.
Yeah, it did not need to be 3.5 hours long.
Well, I mean, James Cameron basically got kind of hooked on the whole, the story of the Titanic itself after he watched the movie that was made in the 50s, and then he started looking at the whole, like, diving to go and visit the Titanic, and he was like, how can I justify the costs of these dives to go down to the actual Titanic? I will write a blockbuster movie. And so that's what he did.
And the problem I have with it is that if he did that and then concentrated more on the ship and the sinkings, it would have been 1,000 times better as a film.
But it wouldn't have been as big a hit. It was the love story that made it the big hit.
Exactly. And if it wasn't such a big a hit, we wouldn't have had to watch it. So it starts off in contemporary America. It's 1996, so the year before the film was made. And treasure hunter Brock Lovett, played by Bill Paxton, and his team aboard the research vessel. Okay, this is going to be good. This is going to be Lord of the Rings type level of mashing names. Academic Mislav Keldysh. Apparently is the name of the boat.
Bless you.
Say that five times fast.
I'm never going to say that again. So that they are diving in submersibles on the wreck of the Titanic, which is a long way down. And the whole reason for this dive is to find this rare diamond called the Heart of the Ocean.
So interestingly, the actual, you know how they had like the droid thing outside of the cabin, you know, outside of their little submarine, and it was like this separate droid thing, and that's what they were filming from. They developed that because of this movie. Before that, they'd always just filmed the Titanic from, like, inside whatever the people were in, like, the actual submarine vessel.
Oh my God. To
design something that could take the tremendous pressure that far below sea level as a camera, an external camera, you know. Like, that was, like, this massive engineering project. It was actually James Cameron's brother who designed that. Fun fact.
And I think this is part of the reasons why this film cost quite as much as it did.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So they are, as Daisy has said, they are using remote piloted sort of submarines to go into the Titanic, and they come across a safe that somehow they manage to squeeze this small droid into a window and then pull out a huge safe that was probably bigger than the window and managed to get it back up to the surface.
We don't see that bit, so therefore...
We don't see that bit. We just assume that was fine.
Yep.
So they recover a safe, hoping that the diamond will indeed be in the safe. However, when they open it, all that is in there is a drawing of a young lady wearing the diamond. So, you know, points for trying.
Close.
And a date of April the 14th, 1912, which, as all historians among us will know, and it's written down here in front of me, is the day the ship actually struck the iceberg. They switch to a suburban scene. We have an elderly lady sitting there with a TV on in the background. Over the TV, we hear a news report talking about the dive on the Titanic, and they describe what they found, and then they show a picture of the picture. They show an image of the picture.
Yeah, conveniently timed news report is conveniently timed.
It is indeed, because it turns out that the person in the drawing is the old lady watching the television.
Spoilers.
Rose Dawson Calvert.
Which means that we know from the start that Rose survives.
This is actually one of my main beefs with it later on, is that we are watching these scenes where they are, you know, spoiler alert, the ship sinks. They're suffering in icy cold water and sort of drowning, and it's like, but we know she's alive because we've seen her as an elderly lady, and instantly there's zero feeling of any kind of sort of peril involved.
Yeah, you see, I feel that the modern day stuff could have, like, not been there, and this film would have been fine.
Yeah. Yep. The framing narrative doesn't end. It goes on for a surprisingly long time.
Yes!
In the beginning of the movie. Because I remembered it being, like, maybe sort of, like, 5 minutes at the beginning of, you know, they go down and they meet the old lady, and she's like, well, it happened a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away when I was on a special little boat.
And they choppered her onto this boat just to have her sit and tell this story as well. And it's like, you could have done this by phone.
But they have her sit and tell this story in the submersible. They get her in the submersible.
They couldn't do this down the phone.
Yeah, this is something. It was like, really, they're on this extremely expensive expedition where every, you know, hour is going to cost however much, and they're just going to sit there while she tells them the story.
Do this while they're in a expensive submersible just outside of the Titanic.
Exactly. Like,
I mean, the whole thing, obviously, that there was what James Cameron was using as an excuse to go down diving on the wreck
exactly.
itself.
Exactly.
So the whole modern narrative was there simply for
the
vanity purposes.
Well, the thing that I did like that they did from that whole beginning section was when they did the, like, really bad computer simulation of what happened to the Titanic when it sank, which, fun fact, they now know is not actually how it happened, but at the time that was how it was understood. The Titanic didn't actually break into two pieces like it showed there. It actually broke into three, and that middle bit was thrown quite away. They hadn't discovered that down there at that point in time.
Oh, wow.
So yes, we have a situation where she's now in this submersible looking out of a window at the Titanic. And she tells her tale of how she got there and how she survived. And we all go back in time in a wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey way.
They did do a nice transition, though. A transition that they did several times. I did like it where they were like, this is the sunken Titanic, and then the same view of the Titanic as it was, like, you know. Mm.
Yeah,
they did that quite a few times, and that was one of the things I did like about the modern day bits. Yeah,
yeah, it linked it two together definitely.
Fun fact: the you know how we have the modern day bits and then the actual at the time Titanic bits. The at the time Titanic bits, the full length of time that's on screen is the exact amount of time it took for the Titanic to sink, which is
two
hours and 40 minutes. The film was actually 4 hours in length at one point, and Cameron was forced to cut it down, so be thankful we didn't have another hour.
Oh my god, this man needs to be stopped.
If the entire time we saw it in 1912 was just literally the boat sinking in real time, that would have been more exciting.
Yeah, well, we did, however, fun fact, the iceberg collision itself lasted 37 seconds, and that's how long they had it last on film. So that part is real time.
Wow.
It's 1912. We're in Southampton, and 17-year-old first-class passenger Rose, played by Kate Winslet, her fiancé, Carl Hockley, played by Billy Zane, and Rose's mother, Ruth, board the luxurious Titanic.
But Rose looks fabulous. Can I just
Rose, indeed, Kate Winslet in this.
To appreciate how fabulous Rose looked when she arrived there.
While Rose and her fiancé and mother's luggage is being put aboard the boat, we see Jack Dawson, played by Leonardo DiCaprio, playing poker in an attempt to win two tickets to get back to America.
In a pub which handily has a window view of the Titanic.
Yeah.
Very super convenient view.
Very convenient view. Nice place. And they're sitting near a window. So he plays poker and he wins two tickets to go back to America on the Titanic. Of course, he isn't going to be in first class. He's in steerage. And again, one of the main themes of this film is the all rich people are evil and all poor people are pure and innocent.
I really enjoyed the the continual juxtaposition that they were showing us between the difference of quality of life on the Titanic between the first class and the third class. I enjoyed that aspect of the movie.
I also enjoyed the fact that the third class people seem to be having way much more fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, but again, that was it. It was the whole, the first class people voice stuck up their own ideas, and they're very stiff and regimented almost. And yet the third class people are having a whale of a time and a party down in the hold. So Ruth, realizing that Rose's marriage is not making Rose happy, emphasizes the fact that the family's financial position isn't great, and marrying Cal will actually help them retain their high-class lifestyle. However, distraught over this arrangement, because although I'm sure Billy Zane is a lovely, nice person,
he seems like a nice man,
Cal is an absolute horrible, horrible person. Rose actually considers suicide as opposed to going through the marriage, and tries to jump from the, or rather climbs up on the stern and attempts to jump off the boat. Which, again, opens a question, were there no deckhands anywhere near them? Were they happy for people to climb up on the railings?
Yeah, I put that in my notes as well.
There's several occasions, I mean, later on as well, where Jack is sort of on the front of the boat and he's climbing on the railings. And like, no one seems to care.
There's no one around, which means that surely they have snuck there somehow.
Like,
yeah, you never see anybody else on that front part of the boat apart from Jack, his friend at one point, and then Jack and Rose. You never see anybody.
I'm surprised that we never saw any sort of, like, staffers or, you know, like, security or something around there.
To be
like,
fair, hey, this was back, bit what, of the boat 1912? And, you know,
yeah, but a
I
ship
imagine
that size is going to have a pretty substantial crew.
Well, yeah, but like, they're not necessarily going to be concerned there with people throwing themselves off the boat.
I think if you look at the amount of money they've paid for tickets, they would be concerned about things like that. But
fun fact, the most expensive first-class suite on the Titanic cost, at the time, $4,350, which in today's money is about $75,000.
Wow. It's a boat.
I mean, that was the most expensive of the first class suites. But yeah, $75,000 is a lot.
It's just to remember, this is 1912, and a boat is the only way to get across the Atlantic to actually get to America.
Yeah.
So if you're going to do
it.
It
takes like a week or whatever as well, you know. It's not like
if you're going to do it in style.
Considering how it ended up, I really hope they got a refund.
Well, yeah, no comments. So we have a situation where young Rose is climbing over barriers and no one seems to mind. But she's discouraged and stopped when young Jack Dawson, played by the dashing Leonardo DiCaprio or something, who is a penniless artist, intervenes and discourages her from jumping.
I like that he didn't tell her, don't do it. He just told her what the consequences of her doing it would be, which would be him jumping in after her and what that would be.
Yeah. That was really well handled.
Yeah, I liked that. It was a lot better than saying, don't do it.
It's also a nice foreshadowing for when people, you know, actually fall off the boat in great numbers.
Yeah. There was an awful lot of foreshadowing in this film.
Yeah, he did describe how cold the waters were going to be in quite some detail, yeah.
It felt like you're just setting yourself up for the inevitability of actually having to experience this later on, bud.
Yeah.
Which I think means that we can blame Jack Dawson for the sinking of the Titanic there. He jinxed it.
I think
It's all his fault.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Anyway, moving on, Jack manages to convince Rose that she doesn't want to jump over the side. However, unfortunately, she slips, screams, he catches her, he pulls her up. But in doing so, the crew, alerted by her screams, come running up and assume the worst. So,
well, yeah, at that point, they've heard screams and they come to find a third-class bloke on top of a first-class woman on the deck. So,
with her clothing
in disarray.
I can understand
their assumption.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
But Rose vouches for him. They make up the story that she was just peering over the edge and slipped and that Jack saved her.
Yeah, but that was really weird because he was in handcuffs and she didn't say beforehand, hang on, he saved me.
No,
No, but she's also 17 and posh and awkward.
And really not wanting to let on that she just tried to top herself.
Yeah,
and really that would just be not several, want to let on that she just tried to kill herself, for sure.
Several inconvenient questions and probably spending the rest of the voyage locked in her room.
Yeah.
However, Cal, her fiancé, is pretty much indifferent to all of this. So she suggests...
She's a terrible person.
She suggests to him that Jack deserves a reward. He offers him, what's it, like £10 or something first? Something, it wasn't a lot of money.
It was a ridiculous amount of money, which she was very, very insulted by. Is like, is that all my life is worth?
Yeah. So instead, he invites Jack to dine with him in the first class dining the following night. Again, that's not really the sort of thing you do someone as a reward. That's almost a punishment.
Mm.
Yeah, no, that's just mean.
Well, that from their arrogant point of view, that's a reward.
Yeah,
allowing this
true.
Third class person to join them in their opulence.
Ooh, oh, pardon me, Mama. I'm going to play the grand piano.
So yes, Jack and Rose are developing this tentative friendship, despite Cal and Ruth, the mother, being wary of him because he's American.
But then, we go from poor. Jack is invited to dinner the following night, and then the next thing we see, Jack and Rose are in the day having a nice stroll together along the deck, and it's like, well, hang on.
Yeah.
Are you meant to be hanging out together now? How did you arrange this? What?
Yeah. Yeah, no, again, a little too convenient in some ways. Obviously, Jack's going to go to dinner, but he doesn't have anything to wear because, well, he's poor.
Yeah, but
an artist.
One of the ladies that was hanging around with Rose's mum, who was being basically shunned by the group of ladies because I think she came into her money like through working rather than it being.
I think her husband
money.
Was something. Yeah, I think it was something with her husband being something in the gold rush or something. So she is.
I think her husband struck oil.
She was new
what
money.
What is disparagingly called new money, yes. Mm.
But she's lovely, and I've forgotten her name. I'm really sorry, it was last week.
Kathy Bates is the actress.
Kathy Bates. Oh, no,
she's great.
Well, whatever the lady's name was, she goes, you're going to need, like, a suit of armor to survive up there. Come on, my whatever his name was is about the same size as you. My son is about the same size as you. I'll get you suited up.
That's after they've stumbled across Jack and Rose spitting over the side of the boat.
Yeah, but I just sort of like wanted to gloss over that because that was gross.
They were using things like egg whites to produce the phlegm that you were seeing.
Nice.
But also,
I'm not sure that's classed as a fun fact.
I didn't say that was a fun fact. just before the spitting thing, we did actually have some proper plot. The designer of the Titanic and the captain were having a bit of a row about how hard they should be pushing her because the designer bloke wanted to not only make headlines for the size of her, but also get to New York like the night before the morning they were due to be there. So he was like, we should go faster. And the captain's like, we really don't need to. So
so they're looking to engage the final boilers and really push for the sort of sprint to the finish almost.
Notably, if you're going faster, you have less time to see icebergs.
Yeah,
true.
There were lots of foreshadowing bits, like from the engineer and telling Rose that there weren't enough lifeboats and the whole iceberg warning things that were just getting dismissed.
So we end up with a scene where Jack is having dinner with the posh people. It's, from what I remember, a ridiculously uncomfortable scene.
But remember these sets, because you'll be seeing them again later in very different circumstances.
Yeah. Following dinner, Rose secretly joins Jack. Actually, where the party's at, which is down in third class, so in steerage, where they're having a good old hootenanny.
Hootenanny,
there you go.
A proper hootenanny.
They're all actually drinking and dancing to diddly diddly music.
Fun fact, Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet both learnt how to dance the polka. Because that was the official state dance of the state that Jack Dawson was from.
Wow.
Nice.
So
that's what their funny little foot things are. That's the polka.
Mm. Yeah. Amazing.
So Rose drinks stuff and gets a bit drunk and they all have a good time.
And the lurking bodyguard is lurking.
Oh yeah, that creepy bodyguard that's just following her everywhere. And
I've no idea what his name is, so through all my notes I've just called him Lurking Guy.
David Warner?
Sure. Mm-hmm. If you say so.
David Warner is a classic British actor who was in Tron and one of the Doctor Who episodes with the Ice Warriors in the submarine.
Good. He was in an excellent Star Trek as well.
Well, in this he was conscripted to lurk, and lurk he did.
He did. There was actually quite a lot of running for a man who is not in his prime anymore, but that's something
else.
Sometimes
lurking involves running.
Indeed.
Fun fact, I briefly met David Warner once in Wales, and that morning it just so happened that, like, I'd had the TV on while I was getting dressed, and there was a one of those, like, Miss Marple murder mystery programs on, and who should be one of the guest actors on it but Mr. David Warner? And I mentioned it to him that it's a funny coincidence. And he just said, just don't ask me who did it because I guarantee I can't remember.
He's a jobbing actor who's been in quite a lot of things, but he was quite prominent in this.
He's a very nice, very funny man. And he's not nearly as unpleasant as he was as lurky dude.
So yes, to have the party. However, that Cal and Ruth blatantly disapprove of the fact that she's hanging out with this young buck of a man. Rose goes to rebuff Jack's advances, but realizes she prefers him over Cal. I have to say, at this point in my notes, I did actually insert a word which was bailed. Because this is as far as I got in my first showing before I had to stop
watching.
Wow,
you only made it to there?
Yeah, I could not watch any more of it. So we then have the they make a rendezvous, and Jack and Rose make their way to the bow and have the whole I'm flying, I'm sort of holding my arms out and, again, climbing up onto the railings, and no one seems to mind.
So I've totally missed a fun fact.
Fun fact away.
So, you know the scene where he is confronting Rose about, so where were you last night? And then he has a fit and throws the table over her and stuff.
Yeah, that was scary.
Yeah. Billy Zane ad-libbed that, so Kate Winslet was not expecting it.
Ha! Oh my god!
Her reaction's 100% genuine.
Cal is blatantly disapproving of the fact that his fiancée is seeing another man. Actually, a reasonable response, I feel, there, but, you know.
I'm not sure the violent tempo is a reasonable response, but
the
jealousy, perhaps, yeah. So I did think that this scene was a really cheesy sunset, like, oh, look at the romantic sunset they've chosen. Oh, this backdrop they've put it on. No, that was actually a real sunset, the point at which they were coming up to filming it, and the sun was just starting to set, and it was this beautiful thing. They were like, oh my god, we have to get this film now because this looks amazing.
Oh, jolly good.
Yeah.
I'm glad that was real.
Yeah.
Yes, but I say this is sort of the poster shot, isn't it, really, of the two of them.
Very and just like so, sort of that golden hour, you know, sort of on the
sort of panning around above them,
on the
looking
whatever
down
you call
they...
the front of a boat.
Prow.
Okay. See, we've been through so many boat movies, and pretty much the only terminology that I'm remembering at this point is seamen, so.
Yep.
There's the really cheesy panpipe music going on.
Oh, the music in this was just terrible.
And then they have their first kiss, but in this really kind of awkward positioning where, like, one of them's having to reach back around over the shoulder and the other's having to lean
so
right
awkward.
Round
like
forward.
You would straight up just hurt your neck. Like, it's bad. Also, I would not want to be kissing while sort of, you know, precariously close to falling off the front of a ship.
Yep.
No.
That's not... I would like, okay, let's step back a couple of meters to where we're perfectly safe and then kiss. But I guess I just suck at being romantic. I don't know. Sweets?
It's fine.
Thank you.
So, yes, they go back to Rose's stateroom and she shows him the diamond that started all of this off.
And she says, draw me like one of your French girls.
Oh my god,
that was
phrase so
cheesy. That a phrase I've used many times or in various different, you know, ways of mocking and not realized it was from this.
I've forgotten for a very long time that that's where the meme came from.
I had
it's an incredibly
no
cheesy thing to say, but was it cheesy at this point, or has it just become cheesy after this film came out?
I think it's just become cheesy because it's become a meme.
Yeah. So yes, we have a scene of Kate Winslet bearing all, wearing nothing apart from this big blue diamond. Jack is then sort of...
Fun fact, that was the first scene they filmed together.
Let's get it out of the way.
Wow, yeah. So awkward.
Well, yeah, they didn't need all the, you know, the like the big boat sets for it. So they were breaking them in with the nice easier sets, which meant
sense.
The nudie scene. But Kate Winslet's never been particularly body shy, so she wasn't particularly fussed about it.
No. Other fun fact, and I'm taking fun facts away from Daisy here, is the person drawing the nakedness wasn't actually Leonardo DiCaprio.
It was James Cameron.
It was James
he's
Cameron.
He's left-handed, so he had to draw it so that then the camera would be flipped for it to be shown right-handed.
To Whoa, he drew it backwards.
Whoa!
Well, I think they just got her to lie facing the other direction. I don't think it was necessarily backwards, but...
Oh, yeah, that makes
yes,
more sense.
So...
But when when she was posing for James Cameron for him to draw her like that, she was wearing a bikini. So he made up
extrapolated the boobage and...
Yep.
Right.
Fair enough.
Well, he did a very good job. It was a lovely drawing. Fun fact, nude life drawing is rarely as sexy as this in real life. Most of the time, you're in a room with a dozen other art students, and there's a saggy, like, 68-year-old man in the middle of the room.
I imagine the saggy ones are more interesting to draw, because they're going to have, like, more folds and detail.
Honestly, like, a good life drawing student should not care about whether or not the model is attractive, because that's not what it's about. It's about learning to draw different forms and, you know, getting the details and shapes and how bodies look in 3D kind of thing, and as opposed to, you know,
Boobs.
Boobs and you know, sort of, and all that jazz. You're not focused on that. You know.
So Jack Dawson's drawing here, was that charcoal he was using?
That's a good question. I thought it was charcoal or pencil, neither of which would have survived.
That's what I was thinking, because that paper was drenched when it was.
Yes, it wasn't
discovered.
A case of this. That safe was not watertight.
Well, yeah.
So...
Was the money dissolved? Was it fixed? Because you fix charcoal and pencil.
You
it?
Do, yeah.
But... I'm not sure he had time to do that with their shenanigans.
So yes, we have the drawing. They put the drawing in the safe along with the diamond because that's the obvious place to put it, somewhere where your husband can find it. Sorry, husband-to-be can find it.
Oh yeah. But the letter going, basically, I'm leaving you for this guy.
Yeah.
But then we got some real plot. Real
yes.
plot.
More plot.
The calm sea that you would think would make it easier to see things by. No, no. In fact, it's going to make it harder to see the icebergs, because you won't see the water breaking on them. There you go. That was some actual real plot just happened.
And it was also dark.
That's because it was at night.
Yeah.
Yep.
They should have slowed down for the dark part.
Yes, because we sort of skipped that slightly, but they had actually decided to fire up all of the boilers and go as fast as possible by this point.
Smart.
Yes, the captain had succumbed to the pressure of the designer bloke and... charged it up, superpower, and they get a warning as well from the nearby ship that there's icebergs afoot, but I'm not sure when that happens.
So we have Jack and we have Rose, and they're finally fully clothed again, or at least she is.
Not
he
for long.
Never not clothed. Not for long. They run into Mr. Lovejoy, who apparently not the guy who does the antiques, but that is David Warner's character apparently. Mr. Lovejoy.
Working man, okay.
A man that had no love or indeed joy in his life.
He used it all up in the name.
Yeah. So they evade him by running away, running through the engine room, which, again, although someone did cry out that they shouldn't be there, didn't do anything to stop them.
I thought this scene was basically to show us how the different bits of the ship link together so that for later on we can understand...
I think also the ship nerd making this film gets to show us what this bit of the ship looks like.
Yeah. So they evade Mr. Lovejoy.
Oh, fun fact about the engine room. They hired really short people, extras, to work in the engine rooms, like 5 foot and under, basically,
Yay!
To make the engine room look bigger. And then they just built like a couple of bits of the engine room and then some really big mirrors. So it looks like it goes on and it doesn't. You can actually see like the repeating bits of the people in the reflections.
Oh my God.
That would involve looking at this movie carefully, though, which
yeah,
I refuse to do.
Yeah, we'd have to go back and look again, and I don't think you want to go back and see any of this film ever again, sweetheart, do you?
No.
No, before that, we get the amazing, incredible sex scene that, you know, we were all so into. We remember every detail of.
I forgot it happened.
It was, yeah.
Because they run away from Mr. Lovejoy and go and find the car and they go and have sex in an automobile, which...
Right, this
we know
car...
this yeah. because it steams up and someone's yeah. naked hand goes on the window. That
but this
like
car
is...
We see, like, it has a completely open front because that's where Jack jumps onto the driver's seat thing. And then it's open between the front and the car bit because that's where Rose pulls Jack through
yeah
to.
So she lowers the window slightly and then somehow physically manages to manhandle him through a hole.
How would it steam up? It wouldn't be that enclosed to steam up.
And anyways, no. that's not something that happens when real people bone. You don't generate that. If you're generating that much heat, there's gonna be chafing. And
it was pretty,
you know,
cold,
like,
outside
blown
though.
Fuses and
the windows do steam up in a car, but I guess only if it's an enclosed space.
So yes, we have
1 hour 38 minutes. We have an iceberg.
They do the do. Yay! And then they make their way to the front of the ship and iceberg right ahead.
Finally. They could have just skipped the first hour and a half of this movie and gone straight to the iceberg, and that would have been fine.
Yeah, so we have a situation where they did actually mention it earlier in more foreshadowing that the rudders on the ship were far too small for efficient manoeuvring. So although they're hard right or hard left or whichever one it was, and they were sort of trying reverses the engines, nothing was making a difference, and they still managed to clip.
If they just hit the iceberg head on, it wouldn't have sunk.
No, this is the thing, is they believe that the reason that it sunk was because it ripped along the side as opposed to just headbutting it straight on.
Yeah.
It would have slowed it down a lot, but it wouldn't have sunk. So.
Yeah, it's not good when you like rip a chunk out the side of a boat because water
typically
tends to get in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then we're like, oh my God, yay, it's the real plot and the iceberg, and we see the engine room start flooding and lads who didn't manage to make it out quick enough get locked inside, and then we're back to Jack plot and it's just like, what? No, stop this. I want to see the Titanic sinking.
Yeah, so we have Cal discovering Jack's sketch of Rose and a note from her in his safe, along with the necklace, thankfully, so that's all safe and sound. But then when Jack and Rose attempt to inform Cal of the collision, Lovejoy slips the necklace into Jack's pocket and he accuses them of thieving it.
Of course, you know.
And they lock him up, chaining him
they
up.
They lock him up. They lock him up in the Master at Arms office.
Yeah, this is kind of creepy, this part.
Bad time to get locked up on a boat.
Seriously. Yeah, Cal puts the necklace in his own coat pocket and yeah, and then the ship starts sinking proper.
5 compartments have flooded and she can only stay afloat with 4 of them flooded.
So yes, the boat is now making a concerted effort to sink, much to the relief of everybody.
With 2,200 souls on board.
And so they start getting the women and children to the lifeboats.
I liked again the juxtaposition here of how the first class and the third class were told to put their life jackets on.
Yeah. So the ship is sinking, still. Thankfully.
Oh my God, this bit takes so long.
They put out a distress call.
They're in the they put out a distress call. Rose and the mother are putting the boat, but then Rose runs away and tries to free Jack because she loves him.
And they basically chained him up to drown.
Yes. And then there was a wonderful scene where she tries to free him by taking an axe and chopping his hands off.
Oh my God, that was ridiculous. The water was so cold, there's no way that scene would have worked.
It's not only that, but actually, so just to describe it for the listeners, so we don't have to make them watch this rubbish. You have Jack, who's got a handcuffs around a pipe. His hands are sort of side by side to the pipe, and then the handcuff metal is over the top of it. So she hits it with the axe. She's got a fire axe from one of the fire points. And as doing so, it slides down the side of the pipe, but somehow doesn't manage to cut Jack's hand off at all. It's just Rubbish.
It's an impressive demonstration of skill, question mark.
So yes, we have another few scenes where they're trying to get out from down the bowels of the ship and are sort of getting trapped and having to swim. And again, more false jeopardy because we think, are they going to drown? Well, no, because we've seen the older lady already. So it's like, just get on with it.
Yeah. And then they get to the gate where the third class passengers have basically been penned.
Locked in, yeah.
There's no actual evidence that the third class were ever locked down below like that. Fun fact.
There is or there isn't.
Not that fun.
Is not any evidence that was actually
But it makes for
happened.
A good movie, I guess.
I mean, it might have happened, but there's no evidence to say that it did.
It might make for a good movie, but in this case, it didn't.
No, it was this whole thing was like it was okay up until when they hit the iceberg, and then it was just like, sink already, Jesus.
Oh, in fact, more specifically, the papers that were released by the Public Records Office showed that third class passengers were not locked below decks. It's possible papers were wrong, but those papers released by the Public Records Office showed that they weren't.
So yes, we go back up to the decks and Cal and Jack both encourage Rose to get on a lifeboat that's leaving. Cal claims that he can get himself and Jack off safely. That sounds wrong. However, after Rose boards one of the boats and begins to be lowered, Cal tells Jack that the arrangement is only for himself and that he is still a heartless git.
Well, this is the bit where Rose goes, oh, I see that evil glint in Billy Zane's eyes, and leaps off the lifeboat onto one of the decks. And then you've got them running towards each other. It's like, Jack, Rose. And then Billy Zane's like, nah, not having any of this. Steals the gun off his bodyguard and starts firing at them in the ballroom, which is filling full of water.
So Cal, rather than getting onto a boat, he starts chasing after them with a gun. Like, seriously, dude, your priority is not saving yourself on a boat. It's punishing Rose and Jack. Like,
yeah, it's kind of it's slightly odd motivation there and seems a little bit out of character.
Yeah.
I guess in many ways it's not, because he is a very cruel
person.
Oh, no,
he's possessive.
Literally.
He cannot let anybody else have his possessions.
That's the thing. He doesn't even, like, there is no way he can possibly still actually want to have a relationship with this woman who clearly isn't interested, clearly doesn't like him, clearly has reasons to not like him and not be interested. But the fact that he's so like, no, you belong to me. It's like, it doesn't matter that she's a person. It's just that, you know, this is mine. And no one else can have it.
Yeah.
Which is such a stupid attitude to have to another human being.
So he chases them with his gun, shoots at them, but is a terrible shot, thankfully.
Then realizes the coat he put on Rose has the heart of the ocean in the pocket.
Yep, so he put the coat, he put the diamond in his coat and then put the coat around Rose because she was cold. And then she runs off. And thankfully, when she leaped from the boat on back onto the Titanic, the pockets weren't sort of emptied out, which would have been the end of the story, really.
Yeah, that was a bit unrealistic.
Oh, that was the bit that was unrealistic.
So he gives up chasing Rose and boards a lifeboat by grabbing a lost child and pretending it's his. So again,
I thought that was quite a smart way of doing it.
Paragon of human virtue.
Oh, yeah.
The bit where Jack and Rose come up to a locked gate and the water is filling and filling, and then there's that super convenient guy passing on the other side who just so happens
to
have keys. Like, oh, yeah. That really
How
felt
perfect.
Very manufactured drama.
Extremely
it,
so.
It was all manufactured. It was terrible.
Yeah, but that one really felt it.
That was really convenient, because usually when you get locked into a place, there's no one around. Whereas, you know, they're on a sinking ship and, oh, lo and behold, a locked gate. Oh, no, there's conveniently somebody with keys. That never happens.
With extra drama of keys being dropped and fumbled and locked and, really...
I mean, they make their way back up to the deck of the boat. We have a scene where Captain Smith, the captain of the Titanic, once again played by Bernard Hill of Two Towers fame. So it was weird in this as well, watching him in this. So Captain Smith is aware that the boat is sinking and aware of the tradition of the captain going down with the ship, which I have no idea is actually a naval tradition or not. Seems a bit wasteful to me.
It is in the movies.
It is in the movies, definitely. Locks himself into his cabin, and then as the water rises outside, his cabin succumbs to the outside pressure and he drowns.
And then the musicians on the ship decide to stop playing, but then one of them carries on, so they come back and they all carry on again. Aww.
Which is really... That bit nearly made me cry. That was kind of sweet and poignant.
Well, because it was true as well, so.
Well, there's the urban legend that they did, but I don't know if they actually did stay playing while the Titanic sank. I don't know if there's any proof of that either way.
Well, I think eyewitness accounts, wasn't it?
And then you had Victor Garber, the architect guy, Yay! Who gave Rose his life jacket. I don't know at which point this was, but at some point he gave her his life jacket and he basically is drinking brandy and he's also going down with the ship.
So, fun fact, when they're playing the sad music and we're seeing the fate of various people... Where one of the ones that we see is an elderly couple hugging on a bed.
Oh, yeah.
While we see the water coming in on the room. They were the owners of Macy's department store in New York. And they both died on the Titanic. And she was offered a seat on the lifeboat, but she refused, saying that she would want to stay with her husband, that as we have lived together, so we shall die together. And so that's where they got the inspiration of the moment in the film where Rose goes, where you go, I go.
You see, these two lying on the bed, sort of dying together, was 1,000 times more romantic than anything Jack and Rose had.
Yeah. Those extras were given the parts of those particular real people who were on the Titanic. And I think it was something like over 250 of the extras were given individual by James Cameron. This is the actual person on the Titanic who you were. This is the backstory of this person. This is who you're playing, and you were really on the Titanic, you know. And I like that depth of the, you know, the people who are really there.
Obsessiveness.
Yeah, the depth of the obsessiveness. Yeah.
Detail.
I liked that.
So yeah, Jack and Rose get to the deck, but realize all of the lifeboats have departed. You get passengers falling to their deaths as the stern slowly rises out of the water as the prow sinks.
The funnel collapses on Jack's friend, who he won the ticket with at the beginning, and it's like, oh yeah, him, we've not seen him in ages. Oh, he's dead now.
Yeah,
we see him briefly in the hootenanny and then we see him briefly as they're trying to make their way out from the lower decks, and then he dies.
Yeah, it's like, oh, that, yeah, oh, sorry.
Oh,
about
no,
that.
No, we also saw him briefly at the beginning of the film when they're on the Titanic, when they do the Jack and Rose pose off the prow as well.
Yeah,
that was funny.
Ah, yes, of course. But I have no idea what his name was.
Fun fact, when they filmed the scene where the water comes crashing into the grand staircase, there was so much water that they had to use for this, it destroyed the set as it went through. So they had to do that in one take and one take only. And it, when the water came in and it kind of lifted all the stairs up, as it came crashing through, the grand staircase doesn't exist on the sunken Titanic anymore. So they think that what happened when they filmed that to the staircase is probably what happened to the staircase in real life.
So yes, the ship is slowly angling away. So the back is rising as the front is sinking. Although at one time we get it so that the angle of the ship is around 25 degrees and yet all the ropes are still perpendicular to the windows.
Mm.
That annoyed me. But it gets to a point where it's obviously the back end is too far out and too heavy and it breaks in half. At this point, we have a ridiculous scene of Jack and Rose hanging on for dear life as this 1,000 tons of ship slaps back down in the ocean like a tail of a whale. And they survive this, bizarrely, although most people don't. And then it gets sort of lifted back up again as the front of the ship, still attached, sucks the rest of it down.
Mm.
So you have a situation where this boat's being drawn down into the water and they're kind of riding it in like almost like a surfboard.
Like the worst theme park ride ever made.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for all the money spent, I know this was 97, but the special effects were quite terrible in some points. Really did sort of almost bring you out of the fact that you're watching a terrible film about a boat sinking.
I was just watching them go down there going, well, they're gonna get sucked down with the ship.
Oh yeah, no, that's why they took a deep breath, because Jack knew the sheer force of the ship sucking them down, they'd surely be able to swim back up before they run out of air.
Yeah, exactly.
Even though the air was actually leaking from their mouths the entire way, which doesn't happen either.
Well, that's because they needed bubbles in the filming, you know.
Because bubbles look
this,
cool.
This was a film of certain flaws. I'm being polite there. This was one of the worst scenes because, yeah, no, it was terrible. But they survive because, of course, they do.
Not only do they survive, both of them, but they manage to find each other in amongst all that just sea of 1,500 bodies in the water.
And wreckage of ships and
people screaming and shouting and wreckage. They find each other and then they find their way to
Jack finds a floating bit of door or whatever. Then he goes and finds Rose. Then he takes her back to the floating door. And in that meantime, no one else has nicked the door. I don't think so.
Yeah, seriously, that door would have been swarmed.
Yeah.
I mean, the door isn't big enough to float both Jack and Rose, so Rose gets on it and Jack stays in the water. And
so, fun fact, in 2012, MythBusters did a Titanic survival episode, and they tested whether Jack would have been able to go on the door as well without submerging it. Yeah, he could have. They just needed to strap Rose's life vest underneath the door to add to the buoyancy.
Oh my god.
Okay, but they wouldn't have thought of that. And she needed her life vest anyway, so that when everyone's dead and frozen, she can swim across and get the whistle of the dude so that she can get the lifeboat.
They got James Cameron onto the show so to explain himself. And he said that Jack needed to sacrifice himself for thematic reasons, since his only concern was Rose's survival and not his own.
Oh, man. Are we getting to the best bit of the film?
We are. It's, the end titles. Yes, we're getting there.
Cameron did concede that he could have used a smaller door to make it more plausible. Yeah.
We're getting near the end of this now. It's all getting a bit kind of...
Then we get Ewan Griffith, who's been organising the lifeboats. Yep.
Yep.
And out of all those lifeboats, there were 1,500 people. This is quoting old Lady Rose on the program there. 1,500 people went into the sea. 20 boats floated nearby. Only one came back,
and six people
were saved from the water. 6 out of 1,500. And afterward, the 700 people in the boats had nothing to do but wait to die, wait to live, wait for an absolution that would never come. They really did wait too long. But we were seeing the reasoning from the other people on the lifeboats going, if we were to sail in there, the boat would get mobbed and we'd all end up in the water. So I can see it from their point of view. But then Ewan Griffith, I don't know whether that was what really happened. Ewan Griffith's character doing the bunging the boats together and shoving everyone off one of the boats so that it was a completely empty one for him to go in and get them. But
yeah.
So then Rose manages to swim to a whistle and they come and get her out. And
wait, no, guys, we missed the best part of the movie. Because ever since 1997, the best part of the movie, as far as I'm concerned, is the bit where, you know, Jack's going on about, like, and I want you to never let go of that promise, Rose, don't let go. And then she says, I'll never let go. And then she lets go of his hand and he sings.
Yeah.
I'm like, you literally just said you weren't gonna, Rose. What the hell?
He's dead and she needs to live. Otherwise, the movie could never happen because then she wouldn't be an old lady.
So they fished him out the water, basically. So the Cal survived, and we hear from old Lady Rose that he topped himself when the financial crash happened. So we're all very disappointed about that.
You missed the bit when they're on the ship that picks them up, where there's like officers going, oh, there'll be none of your lot down here, mate, to Cal, who knows that Rose and Jack may have made it, so he's coming to look, and Rose is just there with a blanket over her head going, ha, yeah, not having any of that. And then
when they ask her name and she says Rose Dawson. Aww.
And it's like, oh. But didn't they say, like, in the future, in the present day part, there was no record of Jack because obviously he didn't actually have a ticket.
Yeah, he had Sven's ticket and he wasn't registered on the boat anywhere, so they wouldn't have known of him. Yeah.
Fun fact, there was actually, unintentionally by their part, a Jay Dawson who had a ticket, but it was a Joseph Dawson.
Interesting.
So then we have... we go back to old Lady Rose in the present day, and I'm just like, just stop telling the stupid story and tell them where the heart of the ocean is.
Well, it's still in her pocket. It's been in her pocket.
She's still not telling them. She's still not let on, and it's so annoying.
So yeah, we get to a sort of finalized scenes. It's late at night, and she walks onto the deck in the freezing cold, in her nightgown.
She's 100 years old.
This whole thing is just ridiculous.
Old lady feet.
Most infuriating scene ever.
Yeah, so she climbs up on the railing again.
We shouted at the TV. I did.
Climbs up on the railing again and then just drops the heart of the ocean, which she's had with her all this time.
With a little, like, whoops.
Into the ocean.
So annoying.
And then she goes back to bed and dies.
Does she?
Or possibly is just dreaming. It's open to interpretation.
Probably, because she's just been in a nighty in the freezing cold and she's 100 years old.
It's open to interpretation, but I read it also. I sort of watched it as... Because what happens is we see her in bed and she's very still. And then we have this scene where they're back on the Titanic where it's still in its glory before it sinks. But everybody who's
like
in there...
sequence.
Jack's
and
there.
And everyone's there who was dead.
Yeah, only the people who died are there.
So
I think I missed that bit. Was that at the very
end?
It's
at the very, very end. So it kind of implies either she's died and she's gone and joined the lost souls of the Titanic.
They're kind of going through the wreckage of the ship and then it sort of magically morphs back to like its glory days.
Oh, no, I do vaguely remember that.
Yeah,
it's showing Rose being reunited with all the people that she lost when it sank.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Not sure whether she's died or she's asleep, so...
Well, I've got a whole load of other fun facts.
Bring them on.
Pick one, and then we'll finish.
I'm going to pick one. It is that Paramount had to send out replacement reels to theatres because they literally wore out their copies.
Yep, the film was so popular that they put it on so regularly. And
this was the first film to be released on DVD / VHS whilst it was still being shown in theatres. That was two,
blimey.
1997, does nothing else get released in that year? It's just...
I don't know.
It was at number one in the US box office for a record 15 consecutive weeks.
Okay, that was three. Yeah.
I know, Joe, you didn't hate this film quite as much as myself and I guess Sammy did, but...
No, it was pleasantly diverting. It wasn't as bad as I expected it to be. It wasn't, you know, it could have done with being half the length.
It was exactly as long as I expected it. Exactly as bad as I expected it to be and exactly as long as it didn't need to be. So yes, that was Titanic. I don't need to go through final thoughts of myself because I think everybody knows what my final thoughts are. But Joe, what are your final thoughts?
It was enjoyable, pleasantly diverting, not as bad as I thought it would be, but it could have been half the length and I would have been happy, and it really didn't need the present day stuff.
And Daisy, your final thoughts?
I liked to watch this from an eye of this is a, you know, like a bird's eye view on the Titanic. Ignore the plot and the characters because they were just irritating. And go, very interesting seeing how the third class contrasted with the first class and then how everyone was behaving when it was actually sinking and that kind of thing. And from that point of view... And from the point of view of finding out all of these little trivia tidbits about the making of it, I found that quite interesting. So because I knew to expect the ridiculous love story this time, I found it a lot easier to just kind of ignore that guff and enjoy the Titanic parts of the movie.
Yeah. And Sammy?
I was just too irritated to ignore the, like, terrible plot and characters. This really sort of obvious overarching theme that, you know, sort of like rich people are scum and poor people are, you know, just sort of morally superior and pure and inspirational and yada yada yada. But also, I think we got tantalizing glimpses at the beginning and end of the film. Of you know, sort of Rose having gone on to live this remarkable life. And I think that movie would have been so much more interesting than this guff. You know, yeah. I want to go see her like flying an airplane and having brilliant careers and whatever.
All the things that Jack said that you'll do in your life when he was talking her down from committing suicide.
Just take that little bit where he convinces her not to kill herself. Then we skip to she survives the sinking, and then we skip to she actually goes and does stuff instead of them just telling us.
Yeah,
it was just crap.
Yeah.
Honestly, it was over-budgeted crap.
I mean, my final thought, I guess, would be, is did any of this actually happen? Yes, we know the Titanic sunk. We've seen the wreckage. But all of this...
Kind of a spoiler.
All of this was from a very unreliable narrator. She was an old lady who could have made all of this up. Right, so let's wrap this up then. So that was Titanic. It was... Yeah.
Too long.
It's very long.
Too much love story, not enough sinking of ships. Okay, so that's it for Titanic. Next time we will have 2012's The Avengers, or as it was called in England, Avengers Assemble.
Avengers Assemble.
Because The Avengers is a old TV series that did have a slightly terrible movie made about it, so they had to change the name. Next time it is going to be Avengers Assemble / The Avengers. And we will be looking at that in 2 weeks' time. So, until then, I'd like to thank Joe.
You're welcome.
I'd like to thank Daisy.
Yeah, anytime. No, not ever again.
And I'd like to thank Sammy.
Never, ever, ever again.
And I'd obviously like to thank all of our wonderful listener for...
No, we have more than one because... my friend Paul is listening, so maybe shout out, hi Paul.
Hello, hi, Paul.
And
I am so sorry, Paul.
Sam and my mum. So Sam, that's three people.
Shout out to Stuart if he makes it this far. New listener Stuart, who I know through my Airbot group. If you make it to this episode, whatever number this is, Stuart, well done. Well done.
And if you make it to the end of this episode, even more well done. So thank you for everybody for listening, and we will be back for The Avengers Assembling in 2 weeks' time.
Hulk smash!
Hulk smash. Bye!
Thank you for listening to Home Movie Club, part of the That Podcast Thing Network. Find us on Twitter at @podcast_thing and on Facebook by searching for That Podcast Thing. Please like and subscribe for news of our future episodes coming soon.